Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
Welcome back to another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and thank you for joining us once again this evening. Week 11 of the college football season is in the books. 11 weeks already. I feel like we were just talking about these guys and previewing the season back in August. Now week 11 in the books, week 10 of the NFL season wrapping up. We are in the home stretch of both the college football and the NFL season already, you know, as now we are approaching Thanksgiving within the next week or so. And I'm going to break down everything that happened this past week from the college football, the prospects that you should be talking about, the prospects that kind of jumped out off the page at you this weekend. And then obviously we always finish out with the NFL rookie report where we check in on all the rookies from the offensive side of the ball, who you should be buying, who you should be selling, who you should be holding, and anything that kind of made some noise this past weekend as well. So let's get right into it with the first segment of the night. As always, it's the NFL draft report. For week 11, let's start like we always do at the quarterback position. You know, and I think right at the top, one guy I want to talk about is Daniel Jones, 361 yards, three touchdowns, one interception, but also had 186 yards rushing and one touchdown. Daniel Jones is a guy whose stock is squarely on the move up. We've been talking about him over the last couple of weeks. Out of Duke, the tutelage out of David Cutcliffe goes a long way at the NFL level. He's got the size. He's got the arm talent to make NFL throws. He's got that athleticism that I've been talking about. Things that, you know, he's showing improvement on this year, decision-making and accuracy. He's still got room to grow in those areas. But with the talk that Herbert may or may not come out, you know, other guys underperforming this year, like Jared Stidham, Drew Locke a little bit. You know, there's an opportunity here for Daniel Jones to push his way into round one consideration, you know, with a lot of those boxes that he checks off. I mean, we know it's about a skill and traits, and that's what the NFL looks for. I mean, there's a reason why Josh Allen went number, you know, in the first round last year. And while Jones doesn't have any elite calling card or elite trait like a Josh Allen had last year with his arm talent, he kind of checks off a lot of boxes that is really starting to intrigue NFL teams. We'll talk a lot about him later again in the tail of the tape, because I think this upcoming weekend could go a really long way in determining Daniel Jones's draft stock. Is he late first round? Is he day two? Does he catapult himself into top 10, top 20? You know, I think this weekend's going to go a long way in determining that. He's not playing at Duke with a lot of other players who are NFL caliber athletes. And that is something that NFL teams and evaluators really take into consideration. And I know as I've been cycling back and trying to watch a little bit more of him this year, you know, because I thought he was more of like an early day Brie guy when I watched him in the summer. I've been trying to, you know, take note of that his talent level around him is really suspect at best, you know, and is he elevating the guys that he can to the best of his ability? And that's something I think, you know, I'm going to really try to hone in when I go back and watch even more film on him. But I think Daniel Jones is the guy who squarely, you know, part what the other quarterbacks have been doing this year, part of what he's been doing, his stock is squarely continuing to rise up this year. Another guy I want to make note of, Will Grier, been checking in on him, 47-10 over TCU. TCU is a team that notoriously plays good defense. Obviously, they're a little bit of a down year this year, but Will Grier continues to make plays, 343 yards, 3 touchdowns. Listen, we've talked a lot about Will Grier. I like his moxie. I like his ability to play off script. Still needs to, at times, you know, straddle that line between over-aggressive, you know, but also taking chances. I think another guy who I think is squarely going to be in the mix between mid-first round to mid-second round. I think there's going to be some NFL teams that are intrigued by Will Grier. I think that's a guy that, you know, is going to continue to draw a lot of buzz about him. And as things kind of settle out, as we find out if Herbert's going to be in this draft, as we find out if Dwayne Haskins is potentially going to leave early, if those guys don't, I think it's going to push up some of these other guys, Jones, Grier, all of a sudden, I think maybe become more consensus first round picks, you know, than maybe more questionable first round picks. So that's going to be something to follow closely. Another guy I want to make note of, Jarrett Stidham, just continues to disappoint, underperform, 163 yards this week, you know. I still think, though, that when push comes to shove, I don't see the benefit of Jarrett Stidham not declaring and coming out. I don't think anything he's going to do at Auburn next year, if he goes back, is going to change people's mindset. I think Stidham is a guy who, you know, from what it sounds like, he's eligible to potentially play in an all-star setting like the Senior Bowl, like the Shrine Game. That might be his best avenue to try to improve his draft stock again, because he does have some traits. I mean, back in the summer, I was saying his throwing motion, very natural, had a little bit of Josh Rosen in him in terms of natural abilities, in terms of throwing motion and arm talent. But he just has it. He's just really struggled this year. And again, I keep coming back to just poor decision on his part to go to Auburn, play in that scheme. I think it's really hurt him. A couple other guys that were drawing a lot of attention earlier in the year, Brian Lewerke, Nate Stanley out of Michigan State and Iowa. Brian Lewerke benched this past week. He was in and out of the game, 11 of 28 for 128 yards. Really struggled. I'm just not seeing it with Lewerke. I mean, listen, anyone's capable of being a day three pick, you know, kind of a project. But there was talk early in the year about him being a first round or a second round pick. And I always was very much on the fence on what I felt about him. I always thought he was more of a day three guy. Nothing has changed my tune this year to think this guy is worthy of a top 100 pick. Same thing about Nate Stanley, you know, out of Iowa, another guy who, again, I watch their games and I don't walk away thinking this guy is a future starting quarterback in the NFL. I walk away thinking this guy is at best, you know, a depth quarterback, third string practice squad guy to start and kind of see what happens there with both of those two guys. Dwayne Haskins was average at best against Michigan State. I think it's going to be fascinating to find out what he does. If he goes back, I think 100% he could, you know, fine tune some things and work on some things. But again, if he looks at the landscape and sees, you know, potentially, you know, an early opportunity to go early, does he really turn it up? I mean, when I was watching that game versus Michigan State, I forget who the announcers were, but they were saying that if he comes out, he's probably an early second round pick. I don't think so. I think if he comes out, he's going round one. I think the upside is too great with him that there's going to be enough teams intrigued with his skill set that he's not getting out of round one. I just don't see that. I think Haskins would be there in round one. Another guy who continues at times to impress, Jake Bentley. This week against Florida, 239 yards, 2 touchdowns. Really exciting game there. Florida came back and won that late, but I thought Bentley really held his own against a solid Florida defense. I think Bentley intrigues me way more than a guy like Lewarke or Nate Stanley does, as a guy that I think has some skill set to maybe, you know, emerge a little bit, you know, amongst that, you know, third tier of quarterbacks or so that are potentially draft eligible, probably go back to school. Ryan Finley out of NC State, 374 yards, one touchdown, one interception, and a bad loss to Wake Forest. I mean, Finley was getting some round one, round two buzz before the season and early in the year. I think he's way more also of a Dave Berry type guy. I like his game a little bit more than Brian Lewarke or Nate Stanley, but I think he's a late third round or probably early Dave Berry type prospect. I like guys like Kyle Laletta way more than him, and Kyle Laletta was an early fourth round pick last year. And then obviously Justin Herbert this past week, 288 yards, three touchdowns, the Giants contingency, Dave Gettleman, Kevin Abrams, and others were down there watching him in that game against Utah. Listen, I don't know if Herbert's going to come out, but if he does, again, I think he's locked into the top five. So I think he makes that decision all the harder for him when he decides if he wants to play with his brother at Oregon, stay there, try to win a national title next year, or do we go out now and potentially be, you know, top five pick in the NFL draft, potentially number one or number two overall. It's a very tough decision for him. Another guy, make note of Kyle Shermer, Pat Shermer's son, playing at Vanderbilt, 249 yards, three touchdowns. He's a name that you're going to hear a little bit about, I think, in the pre-draft process. You know, so he's a guy keeping the back of your radar. I think you might see him at one of the All-Star games. So Kyle Shermer out of Vanderbilt this past week looked pretty solid against Missouri as well. And then one other guy who, again, was generating some buzz back in the summer, Clayton Thorson at Northwestern. 15 of 30, 122 yards, two interceptions. He's another guy. I'll kind of put Thorson with Stanley, with Lewarke. I was never really truly understanding the top 100 love. You know, I'm not saying a lot of people thought they were definite first round guys, but they were those guys that said, yeah, they're day two guys, maybe can push their way up into round one because we know quarterback is such a needy position. I never even saw day two talent in Thorson, Stanley, or Lewarke. I thought I was maybe missing something a little bit in the summer, but I think people are always looking for those guys, the quarterbacks, to kind of emerge. And I thought those guys were needed to show me a lot more from what I watched on those guys in film. And this year, they have not shown me enough to think they should be emerging into top 100 picks. If anything, they've kind of made me more disappointed in them. And I kind of, I'm pushing them even further back. And I'm not even sure if they're like early round four consideration. I think they might be more mid to late day three than even early day three when I watched them play. Let's transition this over to the running backs. I want to start with Trevion Williams, because I think it was about 2 weeks ago that I said I was kind of a little disappointed as a whole on him, because I thought he was going to be in for a breakout year. He was the guy Matt and I talked about on the summer show previewing the running back position as a guy who we thought in Jimbo Fisher's system could really emerge this year, kind of, you know, jump up the running back rankings a little bit. And he had some really big weeks here or there, but there wasn't a lot of consistency in Trevion Williams. But over the last couple of weeks, we're starting to see it. And this past week, 31 carries, 228 yards, and one touchdown in a running back class that I think is very suspect right now and has a lot of questions. I think Trevion Williams is moving himself up in the consideration to be one of the top 6 to 8 running backs that are possibly in this draft class. If the underclassmen that we expected declare game-breaking type talent, good speed, really good athlete, a guy who is a solid build to him. I like Trevion Williams. I think he's a guy who's going to intrigue NFL teams, and we're starting to see him put in more consistency than just a couple weeks ago. I was saying I thought he was going to be this big breakout star, and it wasn't materializing, but maybe I spoke too soon, and Williams has really turned it on of late, and he's a guy who, again, I think his stock is up. I think he's a guy we're going to hear more of as the year closes out, and you're going to start hearing a little bit more buzz about Trevion Williams. A couple other running backs. Make note of another guy who I've been talking about all year, stock up on Miles Sanders. Right now, he is Penn State's offense. Trace McSorley has struggled of late, but Miles Sanders every single week continues to put up stats, continues to be the focal point of that offense. He can catch the ball a little bit. He's got good athleticism. He runs hard. He's got good contact balance. There's a lot to like about Miles Sanders' game. Would not be surprised if he's a guy who's a top 100 pick, day two type talent. I thought that was where he had the chance to emerge. I remember Matt and I kind of conservatively put him in that like 8 to 9 range, I think, before the season started. But I think he's catapulted himself over a lot of guys that are draft eligible in this class. I think Miles Sanders is a guy who could easily be one of the top four or five running backs selected in this draft class if he declares. A couple other guys, Mike Weber and Demaryius Crockett. Demaryius Crockett, another guy who was hoping to see take a bigger leap this year. Really strong freshman year, a little bit down year last year. This past week, over 100 yards and a touchdown. Intriguing skill set. He's got good size to him. He's got a little bit of speed and quickness, more speed and quickness than you might think for a man his size. Runs hard. But again, I think right now it's suspect whether or not he comes out. Maybe he looks, sees the writing on the wall. Missouri's offense might take a step back next year without Drew Locke, so he might want to come out when he can. But he's a guy who I think is more of a day-three type talent. And then I'm going to keep harping the praise at times of Mike Weber. I think he's a guy who's going to be a better NFL player than he is college player. We see guys like that who don't get a lot of publicity, don't get a lot of attention. You know, we're seeing what Chris Carson is, and anytime he's healthy, he's been pretty solid for the Seahawks as a late round pick. I think Mike Weber's going to be a guy who goes on day three, but could be a solid player at the next level, part of a committee, work his way into the mix in a backfield. I like Mike Weber's overall game. You know, obviously at Ohio State with J.K. Dobbins, with all the weapons they have in the pass game as well, we just don't see Weber handle a heavy workload and put up those gaudy stats. But I think he's a pretty solid player. I like his combination that he has of size and quickness and finishing ability, and I think he's got some receiving ability as well. I like Weber's overall game. I think he's a solid day three type running back prospect, and I think he could intrigue some NFL teams. If we transition over to the pass catchers, one guy I want to make note of at the tight end position is obviously Irv Smith. Continue to talk about him. Really impressive again this past week. 5 catches, 70 yards. I think the only question left with him is whether or not he comes out, you know, in this draft class every single week. We're talking about it. Intriguing guy. And a new name I want to bring up is TJ Hockenson out of Iowa. He's 6'5", 249 pounds. He's a guy who, you know, could come out this year. Obviously, when we talk Iowa tight ends, we're always usually talking about Noah Fant. But Hockenson is another guy. Intriguing skill set, a little bit of a better blocker than obviously a guy like, you know, Noah Fant, who's more athlete, more pass catcher. But Hockenson is a guy who really should be on your radar. You know, it'll be interesting to see if he comes out, you know, and if he's eligible to come out. You know, some people say he's eligible this year. Some people say he's eligible next year. But Hockenson is a guy that should be on your radar. Really good prospect there out of Iowa. Iowa just continues to produce really good tight ends year in and year out. Hockenson is a name that you definitely should have on your radar as well. If we take this over to the receivers, right at the top, I want to talk about Marquise Brown out of Oklahoma. I think he's slowly but surely working his way up, you know, to in a scenario where he could be one of the first wide receivers taken in this draft class, because everybody's looking, you know, for that electric playmaker, you know, in the mold of, you know, Tyreek Hill, you know, T.Y. Hilton, guys like that. You know, Marquise Brown, I know his frame and his size is a concern, but elite speed, ability to change an offense by being out there. I mean, we saw John Ross go top 10 because of this, the athleticism and the speed that he brought to the table. I think Marquise Brown is a better player than John Ross. You know, so in a wide receiver class that I think has a little bit of everything in terms of shape, sizes, speed, you know, vertical threats, intermediate routes, you know, slot guys, big guys. I think Marquise Brown is squarely in the mix to be one of the first wide receivers taken. And somebody might say over guys like AJ Brown, Calvin Harmon, stuff like that. Yeah, I think it's possible. I think it's possible because the NFL, you know, is a copycat league, and it's about playmakers, and it's about adding a unique element to a team. And I think that's what Marquise Brown can do. So there might be some teams, you know, I'm just spitballing. Think about the Eagles. They have the bigger body guy in Alshon Jeffrey. They just traded for a slot guy like Golden Tate. If they saw a missing piece in their offense, they might say, we need a guy who can stretch defenses, who can get vertically down the field. Marquise Brown is that guy. You look at the Patriots. They went out and had to get Josh Gordon because they were missing that vertical threat that Brandon Cooks provided for them last year. There's teams throughout the NFL who are missing that guy who can take the top off defenses and be a unique element to a team. And that, I think that's what Marquise Brown could potentially bring. So I think his stock is up. I think in a class where It's been a little bit up and down for some of these wide receivers. No one has really kind of grabbed the lead as saying specifically the alpha guy. You talk to 10 different people that follow the college game in the draft, and you might get literally 5 to 7 different names on who could be wide receiver one in this draft class. Not saying Marquise Brown can be, but I think he's at least in the mix to potentially be in the running with a couple of those other guys I just talked about. Calvin Harmon is right now my top wide receiver in the class. This past week, 15 catches, over 130 yards. I like his combination. I think he can win on all three levels of the field. I think he's great at the catch point. I think, again, I keep coming back to Davante Adams, Hakeem Nicks when Hakeem Nicks was very good. That's who Calvin Harmon reminds me of. You know, another name in the mix, Deebo Samuel. This past week, 4 catches, 120 yards. I think Deebo is another guy. You know, again, I keep going back to that DJ Moore comparison based on the body type, based on how he's going to be used at the next level. I think Samuel squarely in the mix is a guy who could go early. A.J. Brown, again, a different type of player than Deebo Samuel, different type of player than Marquise Brown, different type of player than Calvin Harmon. That's 4 guys who I just mentioned, all could be potentially the top wide receiver in this class. Their games are all so different. A.J. Brown is more of an inside type player, physicality, good after the catch, Juju Smith type player. But again, all to each their own, it's really going to come down to what NFL teams are looking for. I don't think there's going to be a clear consensus between analysts, between NFL teams, between guys like A.J. Brown, Marquise Brown, Calvin Harmon, Deebo Samuel. You can throw DK Metcalf in there, who's going to intrigue teams if his injury checks out. N'Keal Harry, another solid week this past week. He's kind of like that Alshon Jeffrey, maybe with a little bit better athleticism to his game. He's potentially in the mix as another guy who could be the first wide receiver taken. Some people are really jumping on the bandwagon of DeMarcus Lodge, another guy out of Ole Miss, another good performance this past week as well. So there's so many different guys who could kind of emerge in this class. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch and follow closely. Again, every single week, I'm going to keep bringing them up, guys. I think Stanley Morgan Jr., 8 catches, 131 yards, and 2 touchdowns, going to go under the radar, not going to be a guy who gets top, you know, 2-round consideration. But I think round 3 to round 5, he's going to go somewhere in there as a precise route runner, and he's going to be a really good addition to an NFL team as a slot wide receiver that can make plays after the catch, can get in and out of his breaks very smoothly. I love Stanley Morgan Jr.'s game. He's a guy who is going to be definitely one of my guys that no matter what other people think, I think he could have a future at the NFL level. I think he's a guy who, again, I look for those really strong route runners, and I think Stanley Morgan Jr. is maybe one of the best ones in this entire class. Another name we haven't talked about in a while is Emmanuel Hall, Drew Locke's top target at Missouri. He missed some games due to injury, but he's another guy. Flat out can fly. He's going to intrigue NFL teams. I think he's more of a specialized player, so I think more day three to his game. But I think, you know, 6'3", 195, elite speed, he's going to intrigue NFL teams for sure. And then the Baylor guys, I've mentioned them before. Jalen Hurd making the transition from running back to wide receiver this past week impacted the game both ways. 5 catches, 81 yards. Also got back into the running mix with 8 carries for 46 yards as well. And his teammate Denzel Mims, 5 catches, 43 yards, and a touchdown. Another guy who squarely will be on the radar. I think both of those are more day three type talents, but offer intriguing skill sets nonetheless that are going to make some NFL teams take a real close look at them when they get to day three of the draft. So there it is, the NFL draft report for week 11. A lot of prospects, you know, that I talked about there. Guys moving up, guys that I'm intrigued to see how they kind of finish out the year and see if we get any clarity. I think the running back position, the wide receiver position, there's absolutely no clarity, you know, even in the top 5, the top 3, the top 10. There, you know, so much uncertainty that I can't remember where it's been so much uncertainty about, you know, the order near the top of both the running back and the wide receiver position, you know, how it's going to shake out, how many potential top 100 picks we have, you know, at those two different positions. I think the tight end, we kind of see the writing on the wall of the top 3, top 4 tight ends pretty clear what rounds they could potentially go in. I think the quarterback's kind of shaking itself out a little bit. Obviously, Herbert and Haskins are two unknowns of whether or not they declare. But I think then, you know, after that, you're talking Daniel Jones, Drew Locke, Will Greer. I think those are the guys in the mix to kind of round out the top 5. And then obviously, Herbert and Haskins are the unknown factors there. But when it comes comes to running back and wide receiver, I don't think there's much consensus at all in terms of how people kind of seeing that shaking itself out amongst those, especially amongst the wide receiver position. And I think it's overall down year for the running back position as well. So let's transition this over to the Devy Slant, where we take a look at some underclassmen prospects that you should keep an eye on. First, I want to start the running back position. Jonathan Taylor, this past week against Penn State, you know, Wisconsin's having a little bit of a down year this year, but Jonathan Taylor is the one bright spot that every single week you watch a Wisconsin game and you walk away impressed with his running ability, how hard he runs, his ability to break tackles, his ability to pick up tough yards. This past week, 185 yards and one touchdown. He's going to be a guy who, when we get to that 2020 draft class, that running back class is going to have a lot of unique players. They're going to have the three down guys. They're going to have the, you know, the satellite guys. But then you're also going to have guys like Jonathan Taylor who are just really going to be in between the tackles, tough, hard-nosed runners. You know, maybe Jonathan Taylor's not a first-round pick, but I think he could easily be a round two or round three pick. If we've seen guys in the past like Derrick Henry going round two, you know, we've seen, you know, James Conner going round three. I squarely think Jonathan Taylor has that type of ability to put himself on the radar as a guy who will be a top 100 pick when his time comes. Love his way that he finishes runs, his contact balance, his ability to break tackles all stand out for me. DeAndre Swift, every single week we talk about him, and finally the breakout performances that I thought we were going to see week in and week out have started to kind of, you know, he's started to stack them up from week to week now. This past week, 17 carries, 186 yards and one touchdown, four receptions for over 40 yards, 21 touches. I think every single week, if Georgia wants to upset Alabama when they play him in the SEC championship game, I think the game plan needs to be DeAndre Swift getting 25 to 30 touches that game. He's got to be the focal point of that offense in that game. I think he's the one guy on Georgia's team that can create mismatches and pick up chunk plays against Alabama. I truly believe Swift is the one chance Georgia has to stay in that game if they make him the focal point of the offense. And I don't think it's squarely going to be running him in between the tackles. That is not how you beat Alabama. They're going to have to get Swift very active in the pass game, get him on the perimeter, and try to get him making big plays, get him lined up against a safety, get him lined up against a linebacker, hopefully, and make big plays in the passing game. Because I think that's where he can beat some of Alabama's great defensive players, is in that, not running between the tackles, you know, straight up the gut. That is not how he's going to perform there. You know, Benjamin out of Arizona State continues to impress, showing he can handle a heavy workload, 34 carries, 182 yards, and a touchdown this week. Trey Sermon out of Oklahoma, who's filling in for Rodney Anderson. Sermon is a guy that, you know, Matt was really high on when we were looking big picture there, 124 yards and two touchdowns. You know, Oklahoma has gotten back to the run game a little bit more, you know, after the early in the season. I felt like they were abandoning it too quickly and too early, and Sermon's been producing some really strong performances. He's another guy draft eligible in that 2020 class that could impress. At the wide receiver position, Jamon Osborne out of Texas A&M, 6'2", 220. He's a guy who was super highly recruited. Matt was talking him up, you know, when he was looking at the high school class a couple years ago. Osborne is a guy who should not be forgotten, be on the radar. Him, Donovan Peoples-Jones, all those guys, you know, big-bodied guys, show the ability to go up and get it, have the prototype of what you're looking for in those outside X-wide receivers. Osborne is a guy who I think is going to squarely be a guy that we're talking a lot about next year, his ability to go up and get the ball. Osborne is an intriguing prospect that I don't think we've been talking enough about here at Saturday to Sunday. Jerry Jeudy, even in a down week, when I watch him, I still walk away impressed by something every single week. His ability to get in and out of breaks, his ability after the catch. Again, I'm going to have a hard time going into next college football season with Jeudy as not my number one wide receiver in that draft class. We'll see if anybody can kind of take the reins from him. A couple other underclassmen, USC wide receivers, Tyler Vaughn. He's technically a redshirt sophomore, so he is technically draft eligible. I don't think he's going to come out, though. But he's a guy who Bill Ladin, our former co-host here, was really high on. Not this past summer, the previous summer. It's taken him a little while, but he's starting to break out this year. This past week, 8 catches, 91 yards, and 2 touchdowns. A little bit thin frame, got to bulk up a little bit, but really smooth runner. explosive type player. He's an intriguing guy who, while USC is having a little bit of a down year, their wide receivers are going to be something to follow closely next year between Bonds and then Amon St. Brown as well, the freshman. Really strong year this year as JT Daniels gets more comfortable at the quarterback position in the second year next year. I think you're going to see these two wide receivers potentially really emerge into big impact players that, you know, that you should have on your radar, obviously in all Devy leagues, and also be keeping an eye out for them down the line when they become draft eligible as well. Like I said, Vons is draft eligible this year. I just don't expect him to come out as a redshirt sophomore with the limited production and playing time he's had up until this point as well. So there it is. Some underclassmen prospects should be on your radar. And obviously get to know their names well, because they're going to be the future top prospects probably at some of their positions when they are draft eligible as well. So as we take a look ahead in the next segment to the tail of the tape, which is previewing week 12 of the college football season from a prospect perspective, the top matchups that we're looking forward to seeing. First game that really intrigues me is Michigan State, Nebraska. A couple guys I've mentioned already, but I think it's an intriguing game to kind of follow some of these guys. Does Brian Lewerke make the start for Michigan State after being pulled in and out of the game last week? And if he does, how does he look? Nebraska should be a little bit of a get-right game for Lewerke. So can he finish the year strong and maybe, you know, regain some of the momentum it seemed to he had prior to the year starting? And then Stanley Morgan Jr. We've seen him produce against some top level opponents of late. Michigan State, always a well-coached, solid quality defense. How does Stanley Morgan look in this game as well? I expect him to make some big plays and show that ability. Very hard for defensive backs to stay with him, so I expect him to make some plays in this one as well. Ohio State, Maryland. From the Maryland side, Ty Johnson, the electric running back. Again, not a guy who's going to carry a heavy workload, but a guy that elite straight line speed, burst, acceleration, a home run threat in the kickoff game, and obviously as a running back as well. Never really materialized much into a well-rounded player. Not a guy who's going to impact the game much in the passing game, but I think there's a role for him as a guy who's going to come into the NFL and be kind of a change of pace, get him some touches, impact the game, special teams. Watch out for Ty Johnson if you're watching that Ohio State-Maryland game. On the Ohio State side, obviously the usual suspects, you know, more Dwayne Haskins tape, Paris Campbell, Mike Weber, J.K. Dobbins, the running backs, the receivers, the quarterback. You know, Ohio State should have their way with Maryland. It should be a very productive game for all of those skill players there for the Buckeyes. Syracuse, Notre Dame, probably the most important game of the weekend in terms of the landscape of college football. Notre Dame wins this game. They're well on their way to being in the college football playoff. Can Syracuse pull the upset and kind of throw the top of the playoff mix up for grabs there a little bit with that fourth spot potentially wide open and maybe even the three spot? Guys, I'm watching closely. Quarterback Eric Dungy out of Syracuse. Really productive year. Good athleticism. Can move around the pocket well. Good size to his game. Solid arm talent. He's a guy who I'm going to be interested to see against this Notre Dame team, how Dungy looks. From the Notre Dame side, keep an eye on the tight ends. Cole Kmet, the underclassman. Alzay Mack, all reports are that he's going to enter the NFL draft. So he'll be a guy who I think is a round three to round four type player. Similar to what I thought about like a Christopher Herndon last year. I think Alzay Mack has some untapped athleticism and potential to his game as well. West Virginia, Oklahoma State, another intriguing game. Can West Virginia take care of business, or will they basically stub their toe in one of these games as well? Obviously, eyes will be on Will Grier. He should put up big-time stats in this one. On the other side, can Justice Hill make some plays for Oklahoma State for them to potentially pull off the upset? Justice Hill, one of those guys who I think is going to intrigue NFL teams as a round three, round four prospect, electric playmaker, can get him some work out of the backfield rushing, can get him work in the pass game. Teams are looking for those playmaker types. Hill's going to be a guy who I think is going to be squarely on the radar in that round three, round four mix for a team looking for that playmaker to add to their offense. Boston College, Florida State. Again, A.J. Dillon, one of the guys I'll be focusing in there on Boston College. On the Florida State side, does Cam Akers play? He got nicked up a little bit. And then at quarterback, is it Francois or James Blackman? So those are the guys I'll be watching in that game. Duke Clemson, I think I mentioned it earlier on the podcast. Duke Clemson, well, I think Clemson rolls big in this one. I think it is probably the most important game on the weekend in terms of the NFL draft, in terms of evaluation. Every single team that is in need of a quarterback, and maybe some who aren't even in need immediately for a quarterback, but are thinking more long term, are going to have their eyes fixated on this game. It's going to be one of those games that you probably watch multiple times when you're evaluating Daniel Jones. How does he look against this elite Clemson defense? I said it before, Duke is very undermanned. I mean, their O-line is going to be probably manhandled by the Clemson, D-line. Clemson's defensive backs are really going to probably shut down the Duke wide receivers. Can Daniel Jones move the ball at all and put and do anything against this Clemson defense? We saw this Clemson defense really shut down Ryan Finley a couple of weeks ago and really made it hard for people to think Ryan Finley had a shot to be an early round pick. Again, you got to take into account the level of players around these guys, but can Daniel Jones do anything for Duke to keep them competitive maybe early on in that game and show his ability that has NFL teams and has evaluators intrigued by his skill set? This, of all the games this weekend, while Syracuse Notre Dame has the most, you know, importance in terms of the landscape of college football, Duke Clemson is the game that I have circled, is the game that I think is must-watch TV as a Giants fan, as someone who loves evaluating the quarterback position. This is an important game for Daniel Jones. I'm not saying he has to go out there and light it up, because we already talked about the level of players around him compared to what Clemson has. But can he be competitive? Can he show off some of the skills and traits in a game where he's clearly outmatched and undermanned? I think it's going to be really important for him. That game is going to be a fun one to watch. And then Iowa State versus Texas. David Montgomery, the running back out of Iowa State, one of the top five running backs in this class. Colin Johnson, intriguing wide receiver out of Texas. Long, great length, great catch radius, ability to go up and get it. How does he look in this game as well? So there it is, week 12, taking a look at it there in the tail of the tape. So let's round out the night with taking a look at the rookies in the NFL from week 10 in the NFL rookie report. At the quarterback position, it appears that it's Lamar time. Okay, the Ravens, Joe Flacco has been on crutches most of this week. There's talk that he is going to miss this week's game. There has been some talk that Robert Griffin may start. I don't understand that. It's time to unleash Lamar Jackson. It's time to see what they have in him. It's time to let him get some experience this year and then kind of get him ready for next year. I think that's what this should be the rest of the stretch here for Baltimore. They're still technically in the mix there, so maybe that's probably why they're a little bit hesitant to go to him. But I think put him out there. Let's see what he has. Let him take it some growing pains now. Let him use that athleticism, kind of scale back the offense a little bit, kind of let him do what he does best, move around, use his athleticism, take his shots, again, intermediate parts of the field and between the numbers. If you ask him to make too many throws to the outside, that's where, or vertically down the field, that's where Lamar Jackson and his inaccuracy really are spotted. But if you ask him to throw between the hash marks and in the short to intermediate parts of the field, he can be effective in that range right now. And you combine that with his athleticism, I think he can really jumpstart that offense a little bit for Baltimore down the stretch. Baker Mayfield, second game with new coach and new play caller. 17 of 20, three touchdowns, 216 yards. Probably the best performance of Mayfield this year. You're starting to see a little bit of what we saw in college. His ability to spread it out, make plays, play off structure a little bit. But his accuracy has always been one of his calling cards. We're starting to see that come to the forefront a little bit here in the last few weeks. And listen, Cleveland needs to go out. They need to add another playmaker on the outside. They need to upgrade areas of the offensive line. They need to get a better, you know, system in place for Baker Mayfield. All things I think that they will do in the offseason. Squarely think stock is up on Baker Mayfield. Josh Rosen this past week, 208 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. Again, for what Rosen's working with, I think he's, and the lack of O-line play, the lack of playmakers, I think Josh Rosen has held his own this year and showed enough to be excited about him and to be intrigued about him as a prospect. Josh Allen and Sam Darnold missed this past week. due to injuries. Josh Allen is potentially expected back in week 11. Sam Darnold and the Jets are on bye this week, so it's possible Darnold is back in week 12, but that is a little bit unknown and up for debate at this moment. If we transition over to the running back position, Kerryon Johnson this past week, 2 touchdowns, more active in the passing game. Even with Theo Riddick getting 6 or 7 catches this week, Kerryon Johnson still was involved in the passing game, and I think that's important. If he's a guy who is shown enough in the passing game to get some catches each week, I think the sky really is the limit for his overall game, for his fantasy impact, and a guy who I continue to say, buy Kerryon Johnson now. I'd trade my first round rookie pick to get him on your roster. I'd wait for him to have a little bit of a down week again where he doesn't catch the ball, and then I'd go out and get him. Because honestly, I don't expect LeGarrette Blount to be back on the roster next year. I have absolutely no idea if Theo Riddick is, but if he's not, Kerryon Johnson could step into a 3-down role, see 17 to 19 touches a week. I don't think he's a full bell cow that's going to carry, you know, get 24 to 25 touches. I don't think that's realistic, so it'll bring in somebody else. But if he is a guy who's going to get those receiving touches next year consistently, if Riddick is not there, I think it elevates him to potentially high RB2 with some potential low RB1 performances. If he's going to get 15 carries a week and 3 to 5, you know, targets a week and see that, you know, 17 to 19 touch count and be the guy who's playing near the goal line, I think he's got the type of upside to be a really impactful running back at the next level. I'd be still trying to buy Kerryon Johnson in any league. Nick Chubb exploded this week, 176 yards and a touchdown rushing, 33 yards, 3 catches and a touchdown receiving. Nick Chubb has been one of the focal points of that Cleveland offense. Again, I love Nick Chubb's game. The one question I'm going to have about Nick Chubb in terms of fantasy is his ability to consistently perform with the receiving totals that I think are most likely going to stay low. I think Duke Johnson is going to be there for a while as that receiving guy. So Nick Chubb is going to be a little bit more inconsistent, you know, than a guy who like Kerryon Johnson might be next year if Kerryon Johnson has that receiving workload. So, but in terms of rushing ability, I think they're very close to each other in terms of their overall rushing ability. So I favor Johnson slightly more because of, I think he's going to get more work in the receiving game, but I love Nick Chubb as well. If there's anyone not valuing him appropriately, go get Nick Chubb. I'd pay a pretty significant early first round rookie pick for him. Give me Nick Chubb over any running back that's coming out in this upcoming draft class. Give me Kerryon Johnson. These guys are locked into good roles already, and their upside is as high as any running back who's going to come out in the 2019 NFL draft. Don't be afraid to offer your first round rookie pick for either of these guys, no matter how high it's going to be, especially if you have a need at the running back position. So, you know, those are two guys. Again, go get them now. Rashard Penny came out of nowhere this week. 12 carries, 108 yards, and 1 touchdown. My one concern about Rashard Penny is, yes, they're going to eventually give him an opportunity there as a first-round pick. But they like Chris Carson. They like Mike Davis. Penny, they said, still is having a hard time learning the offense and the playbook. I just don't see a clear path to him being the lead guy. I think even next year, I think Carson or Davis or both of them will be on the roster. I think Penny will be in the mix. I'm just not sure he's going to have as much of an opportunity as guys like Chubb or Kerryon Johnson. I would be surprised if he did. Maybe he gets an opportunity this year and he kind of runs away with the job. I'd value Penny more of a early second round to mid second round rookie pick than I would a first round rookie pick, similar to what I say about Kerryon Johnson and Nick Chubb. Sony Michel, 11 carries, 31 yards. I'd be using this all day as an opportunity to go buy Sony Michel. Find the owner that's a little panicked about the Patriots. Maybe he's worried about Brady retiring at the end of the year. Maybe he's worried about James White being too big of a role. Listen, that similar to Nick Chubb, Sony Michel may be a little bit limited. I think Sony Michel's receiving ability is greater than Nick Chubb, but that might not be the role the Patriots ever really have for him. So yeah, he's going to be a little touchdown dependent, similar to Nick Chubb at times. If he doesn't score, he may not produce for you, you know, but I think Michelle's upside, similar to Chubb, low RB1, high RB2, even without much work in the receiving game moving forward, especially if that offense, I think they'll fix it. You know, not sure Brady's retiring at the end of the year. Patriots know what they're doing. If Michelle, you know, he's been hurt a couple weeks, then he has this first game back where he's sluggish. Go out and get Sony Michel right now. I do not think you'll be disappointed if you make that investment in Sony Michel. So go get him right now. And then if we take this to the plate, the pass catchers, nothing of note at the tight end position, guys. It's been the same thing for weeks now. If you are a fan of any of the tight ends that went early in the draft, you can go out and probably buy them cheaper than what their draft capital was last year. I'm starting to be a little intrigued with the upcoming draft class of tight ends if some of these guys declare, like Irv Smith Jr. So I'd be a little bit hesitant to go out and get these guys unless I feel like I was getting them for value. Like, so if they were a second round rookie pick and you can get them for a third round now, sure. You know, maybe I'd go out and get them, but I'd want to at least feel like I was getting a one round value almost from where they were bought. I'm not sure right now that I'd buy them for what their cost was last year. I'd want to feel like I was buying a little bit on the low side until I see them prove it more and be a little bit more an integral part of their offense. You know, I thought Gesicki was really going to kind of take the reins there since Miami didn't have anyone. Really hasn't happened. Hayden Hurst got injured early, or I think he might have, but they got Mark Andrews there. They got a host of other tight ends there. That's kind of setting him back a little bit. And then obviously Dallas Goedert's playing behind Zach Ertz, who right now is the number one or number two tight end in all of football. So again, you can probably buy low on these guys, but I wouldn't be actively buying unless I felt like I was getting them for a good value at this point. And then the wide receivers, Anthony Miller, another big performance this week, 5 catches, 122 yards and a touchdown. Seems to be he has taken the reins from Taylor Gabriel as one of the focal points of the passing game with Allen Robinson. I think Miller and Robinson are probably going to be their guys that kind of develop down the stretch here as the clear number one and number two options in that pass offense. Really like Anthony Miller's game. Think he can impact on all three levels of the field. He can play outside. He can play inside. I think inside is probably where he creates the most mismatches with his skill set. Good route runner, but the ability to get vertical from inside the slot, like Anthony Miller's game a lot. I would probably value him as an early to mid second round rookie pick. If you really are a fan and want to be aggressive on him and maybe trade away a late first round rookie pick, wouldn't have a huge problem with it. Because like I said, I think this wide receiver class is a little bit suspect in terms of there's no definitive order right now. So I think the pre-draft process, landing spots are going to kind of dictate the how we rank those guys for rookie drafts next year. Anthony Miller, we know, is in an offense that's up and coming, got a creative play caller, got a young quarterback emerging a little bit, and we know he's going to be an integral part of that offense moving forward. That we won't know about for some of these other guys until it happens. So I wouldn't mind being a little aggressive and buying Anthony Miller as well. I would target early second round rookie pick, but if you really are in the need for a wide receiver and you want to be a little aggressive, I'd be okay offering a late round one rookie pick as well. Calvin Ridley, a little bit of a slow week. I'd be using any slow weeks for Calvin Ridley to check in on the owner and see if I can buy him. Even if it cost me what his draft pick was last year, if he was a 10th pick in the first round and it cost you, you know, a draft pick that was probably going to be in that area, go get it. If you had to pay a little bit more and you need a wide receiver and you might be in that 5 to 7 range, I would trade that pick for Ridley. I think Ridley, I like Ridley more than anybody who's going to be in this draft class. I like his landing spot more, playing, you know, Robin to Julio Jones's Batman right now. I think that gives him an opportunity to not see the elite defensive backs right now. And then I think he eventually works his way up to kind of take the torch from Julio down the line, but that's probably a couple years away before that happens. I'd be actively trying to get Calvin Ridley on my teams. You want to buy low guy? Traquan Smith held out of the box score this past week, but playing a ton of percentage of snaps. I think this is a great week to try to go out and buy on Traquan Smith there. You know, you can try to sell it to the guy who has him. They were going out to get Dez Bryant. They signed Brandon Marshall. They must not be that high on him. I don't think it has anything to do with Traquan Smith. I think they're looking to fill that Cam Meredith role, a little bit of a veteran presence who can play inside, can play outside a little bit. I think Traquan Smith is locked in there as a 70 to 75%, you know, snap player there. Vertical threat. I like his overall game. I'd be trying to buy him right now on the cheap if I could. in any league that I can get my hands on him for a reduced price. He may have been a third round rookie pick. You probably would have to pay a little bit more than that right now because we've seen some glimpses and he's playing in that offense, but I'd be okay buying Traquan Smith for a mid to late second round rookie pick and taking my shot with him. I do like the talent enough there as well. And then Marquez Valdes-Scantling, clearly he has put himself in a position now to be a guy that needs to be moved up. Any wide receiver rookie rankings for Dynasty perspective, clear number two there for Green Bay, has leapfrogged ahead of guys like Jamon Moore and Equanimeous St. Brown. All three of them were taken. Jamon Moore and Equanimeous St. Brown came with much more fanfare before the NFL draft. Even after the NFL draft, it kind of seemed like Valdes-Scantling was a little bit of a forgotten guy, but 4.39 speed, good size, ability to win vertically down the field, can also play in the slot. Intriguing player. Aaron Rodgers is a fan of him. Randall Cobb might not be back next year. Geronimo Allison out for the rest of the season. So there is opportunity there for Valdes-Scantling to be a number two, number three fantasy wide receiver the rest of this year, and then be a, you know, top 30 type wide receiver entering the offseason and potentially entering next season as well. So I think his dynasty stock is squarely up. Check in on the owner. Maybe they're not buying it. Maybe they think it's a little bit fluky, you know, because he was like, at this point, I don't remember, I think a fifth round pick. I think Jamon Moore went in the fourth, and then Valdes-Scantling was in the fifth, and then Equanimeous St. Brown was in the sixth, if I remember correctly. But Valdes-Scantling, not a top 100 player. So some people really fall back on the draft stock for too long. I think draft stock means a lot, especially the earlier you are. I think the leash is longer, but at this point, I don't think it matters that Valdes-Scantling was a fifth round pick. I think they like his game. They like his upside. That he might have went in the fourth round of your rookie drafts, I'd squarely be okay offering a second round pick for him. Whatever you're willing to offer for Traquan Smith, I don't think Valdes-Scantling should be all that different in terms of draft capital if you're looking to buy him right now. And the owner of him might still look big picture and say, yeah, they have a lot of young guys there. He might not be locked in and they might be looking to move him. I would take an opportunity at that instincts and buy him if I could, you know, for a mid second round rookie pick. Because I like the upside, I like the landing spot, I like the quarterback he's going to grow with, and I like his overall game. So I'd be looking to get him on my team right now. So there it is, the NFL Rookie Report for Week 10. Another week in the books all around. So excited, looking forward to Week 12 of the college football season, Week 11 of the NFL season. Every single week, I'm amazed by just how much there is to talk about, how much changes from week to week, stock up, stock down, you know, taking a fresh perspective on it, watching, you know, more film on these guys, seeing how they perform in certain instances. I know this week, like I said, Daniel Jones is the guy that I am squarely going to have on my radar, and any draft person should, any fan of the Giants, any fan of the Raiders, the Broncos, teams that need a quarterback, you should be watching that game very closely this upcoming weekend to kind of get a better feel for who Daniel Jones is and what he could potentially become at the next level. So on behalf of Matt, who is set up next week to make his return to the podcast, we're looking forward to it. So Matt and I should be back in full effect early next week, recording around the country. On behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. Enjoy the games this weekend, and we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.